Hello, everyone. My name is Fritz Charles. It's a pleasure and an honor to be a guest of Jody's podcast. What do I do? I'm in a mobile app business. So I work with a company called Universe, and we allow individuals, many of them small businesses, to create websites on their phone. So you get it, download the app, get a domain, and have a website up in minutes without even touching the computer. I've been in this industry for years. I also consult with small mobile apps on the side. And what do I like more specifically? I help with growth. So how do you get downloads, and how do you make sure you make money, right? A lot of great technologies are out there, but that nobody knows about. So like, is no point in making some of the coolest tech out there if nobody knows about it. So it's really more about getting people to know about it, but the right people. And then obviously, nobody, well, in our case, a lot of business, a business is not a nonprofit, so you have to make sure you make money from it. So thinking about the good ways to monetize, but ways to monetize that don't push users away. So that's kind of what I do at Universe. That's what I help clients with in consulting, and that's what I've done my whole career.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, cousin. Yay. So this is like my first relative. I love this because I come from a world of entrepreneurs and innovators. And although there's a lot of our relatives that are in the medical field and they're in the law field and they're engineers, we are all innovators. And so I love the fact that I can have my beautiful cousin here to talk about who he is and how great he is. So good to
No, thank you. Thank you, cousin. It's an honor and a privilege. And you know what, I mean, obviously we have a lot of rock stars in our family, but honestly, business and innovation and entrepreneurship is not a thing that our parents' generation did, and even our generation. And so you have been a trailblazer in the family when it comes to that. And so I've kind of been honored to follow your footsteps and been inspired by you. And then some of our younger cousins are starting to get into it. So we're a little bit of on the edges in our family, but we're making it more mainstream. And so thanks to Jody, who's been the first one to kind of do that, I've been able to kind of help support in that mission.
Oh my God. All right. So, I mean, we can talk about family things all day, all along. I mean,
Of
but
course.
it is one of those moments where we always would sit in the corner and we went to business school and everyone's like, we don't understand why you guys went to business school. You could have these other things. And so we were like the redhead stepchild in the corner. But I love that
Exactly.
people are doing this. So enough about our love for each other because we love each other. I want everyone to know about you. So where did you start? Like, I mean, what was like the path of your career of where you are right now? And there's something you didn't mention in your introduction, but I want people to like get to know that part of you too. So you have so many different layers. So tell us where you started. Who are you?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm from Queens, New York, born to Haitian parents, similar to yourself, obviously. Didn't grow up with any exposure to business much, but knew I wanted to do it at an early age. I can't really articulate why, but it just seemed very interesting to me. And went to college, studied finance, and my first career was in Wall Street. So I worked at the now historic Lehman Brothers. That was my first job out of school. It was job of my dreams, super excited, and worked hard, got promoted, and the firm went bankrupt. Poof. And that kind of helped illustrate for me the need to push my career towards something more entrepreneurial, something more innovative, something where I could gain a skill set that's not tied to some big institution. Decided to go to business school. So I ended up going to Wharton for my MBA, and discovered tech and startups. And so been doing tech and startups ever since. So I've worked at companies that were in doing tech in Africa. I did I worked at the National Basketball Association on their NBA on their mobile app. I also on the side developed a pretty big passion on around cryptocurrency and blockchain, because it was kind of a cool combination of my finance experience and my tech experience. And so I actually launched my own platform called CoinGamma, where I educate people about blockchain and crypto. So did that, and also maintain my interest in my skill set within mobile applications. So I would say, to summarize it, I spent some of my career in finance, spent a lot of time working in mobile applications. After that, you know, developed a side interest in cryptocurrency and, you know, kind of do both of those things right now.
Okay, so you, I mean, I am queen of throwing out a lot of different questions to people, but you have so many different layers to work with. So I'm going to start at the beginning where you started your career at Lehman. So how was that whole entire experience of being at Lehman at the time? I mean, everyone knows. I mean, I was in the media at that time, and Lehman is the place that everyone that went into finance, like, that was the place that you had to be. And so what was the experience working there? And what was it that, I mean, it was your dream job. You said it was a dream job. What was it that made it the dream job? What were the key lessons that you were taught there that you are actually still using to this day?
Sure. Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, definitely. When I graduated college in the mid-2000s, it was probably three firms that you want to be at: Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley. You know, the other two are still around, but Lehman's not. But yeah, it was, you know, my job there was as a trader. And so, you know, you see traders depicted on TV and HBO shows, things of that sort. There, most of it is sensationalized, but there's a level of it that is true. It's an intense job where you have to process a lot of information on the fly, make decisions that are fast. I was age 22 and I was doing transactions that were like in the billions of dollars. You know, obviously that was no correlation to my salary, which was much, much slower, but it was still awesome to kind of be in control of that at such a young age. And then also you're dealing with intense individuals that, you know, you have to come up with answers quick, produce solutions fast. And you're around people that, you know, are from the most illustrious backgrounds, right? As somebody that grew up in Queens, New York, and, you know, obviously being of African-American kid, or, you know, Haitian-American kid, however you want to call me, just like, we didn't have exposure to that kind of corporate America, that intensity. I went to a public institution in college. So that was kind of my first world. So part of it was like a skill set, but some of it was more social, understanding how to conduct myself in, around people that I didn't grow up with, that I wasn't exposed to up to that point. And so that was awesome to kind of learn how to do that. And also like, the markets are pretty interesting. I mean, the markets, there's obviously a financial component, but there's a political component, there's a geopolitical component. You know, you have to care about the weather because hurricanes could affect the market. Like, it's such a wide – if you are involved in financial markets, it's such a wide span of things that you have to get into. And I always thought of myself as a polymath, and I still do. And it's a perfect industry for a polymath. So I would say those are the main things that I gained from it, from both professionally, intellectually, and personally.
So now then were you seeing the writing on the wall, or at this point you had spent, I mean, how many years were you at Lehman?
So I was there for 2.5 years.
Okay. So you're there for 2.5 years. Are you now making the decision, or, I mean, what was that decision where it was time to go for your MBA program? Was it something that you saw where, I'm meeting a lot of these individuals, I see if I get that degree, I can get to another higher level? Or did you see the writing on the wall where Lehman was just starting to find its way out the door pretty much?
Yeah. So it's a combination of both. So like I said, I went to a public institution. You know, I growing up, I never was around people that went to like Harvard, Wharton, Amherst, and all these, you know, quote unquote fancy schools. Yeah. And that was the place where I did that. And what I realized is that these individuals were not smarter than me, and their education probably wasn't better, but their social circles were different and their connections were. And so part of school, for better or for worse, is actually the network that you're getting from it. And I didn't have it. So I kind of realized that pretty early on. But that was enough to push me. I think over time, I realized, you know, the economic crisis starting to ensue. And then what was happening was, I saw what was happening to some of the older individuals that were kind of doing this industry for years. And to them, like, if they couldn't do this job, they couldn't eat. Like, they just were only able to do one thing. And so the combination of both those things kind of made me think, like, hey, listen, maybe I should take a step aside and kind of really dig into building my network, building my skill set. And because I want optionality in my career. Obviously, the main optionality is around entrepreneurship, but even outside of that, I want to be able to move between industries. And the skill set I was getting, I couldn't do that. And so, yeah, that's kind of what pushed me. I mean, but what the final straw, obviously, I was actually there when the firm went bankrupt. So, like, I was there, like, when the doors, you know, quote, unquote, symbolically closed. And then the firm called Barclays Capital ended up buying Lehman Brothers. And so I ended up keeping my job into the new firm that acquired us. So I didn't have to leave. I kind of just preemptively decided to. When we made that transition to Barclays, I decided to apply to school and, you know, was able to get into a few schools and chose Wharton. So that's kind of, that was it. It was kind of a confluence of factors, but I would say network, skill set, optionality. Those are three things that made me decide that.
And so when did the, what was the transition of now we're going into, like, I mean, I've had the passion for finance. You're in, again, a historical institution. I mean, in the history books. But then you're deciding to go into technology. So what was that intersect where you found the love of both, or the you lost the love of one and then you gained the love for another, or et cetera? So how was
it was in school. So funny enough, because the school actually, at least at the time, even now, but at the time was considered a finance school. So I left finance, I escaped finance to go to the finance school. But that was an interesting time. That was when I started school in 2009. So that was about a year and a half after the iPhone came out.
Yep.
And so that introduced a completely new industry. Technology was starting to become more of a mainstream thing. Like the movie Social Network came out. Yep. So the whole idea of launching a startup and growing it into something huge was kind of, reintroduced. Obviously, I think you had the tech bubble in 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. This was about 10 years later, and that brought it up. So there was some macro influences, but also, like, the phone was something that I really found to be very interesting. And in particular to the phone, where phone meant finance was interesting to me. So a lot of people use Venmo. Venmo was actually created on the Penn campus when I was there. So I was exposed to that. And then there was a whole thing called M-Pesa out of Kenya that I was studying, where people were using their phones to text message money to each other and that came out. So I was, like, blown away. And so that kind of put me into the direction of really being so interested in mobile apps, mobile technology, mobile phones, because, you know, this device is more powerful. If you compare the phone to computers that were built prior to 2005, it says, like, the most powerful computer, like, this phone is more powerful than that, right? So I think I kind of saw that was trending, and I just wanted to hop in. And so I really dug into mobile technology, mobile apps, and then also obviously the usage of that within finance. And so that's kind of what really pushed me in that direction. And also I saw the power of how technology could push entrepreneurship versus, like, brick and mortar or real estate, something like that.
It's so funny because, I mean, I use the phone as an example in of the majority of my speeches in regards of, like, how certain phone companies target focus on their target audience. And I remember when one of the case studies, and I don't know if you even read this case study about how Digicel was created, where gentleman was like, I mean, a guy from Ireland is like, he was like, I just need phone service. What's going on? And just, like, how he knew how to engage with the target audience and how he didn't annihilate his competitors, but he really made a big dent in their price point. And so I think it's interesting how you're right. I mean, I remember having the clock radio. I remember having the camera. I mean, just, like, the whole load of stuff. And I can't live without my phone. I mean, I can turn. Right. I'm one of those people where at nighttime I turn off my phone, but my entire business is run from having that phone with me. And I've done photo shoots for people, and everyone's like, do you want to bring a big camera? I'm like, I don't want to lug a big camera, where I get the same results from the phones nowadays.
You see?
It's everything. You've started many companies. I mean, you've worked with many companies. What is, like, I mean, What were the obstacles that you were dealing with when you got out of B school and you decided to start a company? Because you've worked in corporate America, so getting paid well. I mean, like in comparison to an entrepreneur, you get paid well.
Of course.
Why did you decide to do it on your own terms? And what were the pros and the cons of it?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with the cons. The cons, obviously, are you're not producing an income. And if you are, you produce a low one. And it's lower than what I made before school. So mentally, that doesn't even make sense. Like, why would I went to a public institution, got a really good job. I had no student debt. Then I left to go to a very expensive institution, incurred student debt. And now I want to do this whole, like, scrappy startup thing. That doesn't even make logical sense. You can't even, I mean, your family, your family, so you couldn't imagine, like, what my parents were thinking in addition to my peers. And so, like, the cons, like, obviously, is, like, people look at you like you're crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So for better or for worse, we're all influenced by what people think of us, even if we don't act like we're not. So, like, people looking at you like, people hear you, oh, you graduate school, like, what are you doing next? Like, we expect you to get the job at the biggest place, and you just say, nah, I'm doing this and that.
Also, because people are like, you're so smart, why are you doing this? Like, you can get a job anywhere.
Exactly. So, So my personal finance obviously gets, you know, a hit. It's a very lonely path, right? Because, you know, you're just kind of trying to figure out things yourself. And also, I just didn't really, especially looking back, like, I really didn't know much, you know. So I was just kind of, like, flailing my arms, reading as much as I can, trying to apply it. But the breadth of what I needed to learn was just so vast. So I guess those are the negative things. Positive things is that, you know, if you're a self-motivated individual and an independent learner, like, you know, you could climb these things fast. And even if things don't really work out, you get so much experience from the repetition of it. And also, like, you know, you're driven by, like, something larger than you. Like, you could build something that either can get passed on or something that just, it could be, you know, whether, I mean, obviously that's the big goal, something huge and, you know, worth billions that could be passed on. But at a simple level, you know, sometimes, you know, especially in technology, you build something, you put it out there, and then, like, you know, you forget that there's people on the end of it. And so sometimes you have an individual that you don't even know, you're not even connected to, say, hey, I saw your website, I used your app, I listened to your podcast. Like, you can't even monetize that feeling. Like, it's like, and I think it's only a certain type of individual that could really understand that and really appreciate that. And those are the individuals that are the creatives, the entrepreneurs, the innovators.
For someone, I mean, well, before I ask that question, crazy pandemic, crazy, we'll call it race relationships that are happening in this world right now that are coming to the forefront. How did that affect you in your business? Like, I mean, what is it doing for all the things that you've built and all the things that you see in the future? Because 2020 has kicked us in the ass. I mean, it's...
Of course.
Like, holy. I mean, everyone's excited for this new decade, and boy, no one saw this coming. And we're going into election year. So three major things that are happening in this one first year, and the first 6 months. So what has that done to you, your vision, your company, and the growth of it?
Yeah, no, good question. So I guess I'll start with the pure, like, business work opportunities channel. So for the startup I'm part of, Universe, actually has been business as usual. So the company has been always remote. Mm-hmm. It's a mobile app that allows people to create their own platforms, their own businesses. And because people are at home, more people are deciding to work on projects and check things out. So on that end, actually, is business as usual. On, you know, my consulting work actually has picked up a bit as well, helping individuals grow their mobile apps and things of that sort. And then, around people are, and then also on the crypto side, people are interested in learning and crypto content. And actually what's happening in this pandemic, you know, there's a big part of crypto that has to do with people not trusting the government, trusting the economy, trusting everything. And so, you know, there's a ton of interest there too. So interestingly enough, and I say this, you know, as sympathetic as it can be, because I know a lot of people are not working, a lot of people are adversely affected. It's been between business as usual to positive on the work side. Obviously, work is just not obviously the market opportunity. Work is also us as individuals. I've been mentally affected, right? And just like work-wise been affected, right? So even though I've always worked from home, I've never also worked from home with a baby daughter and my wife, right? And now that's happening. So we're trying to do daycare between Zoom meetings, right? So like that adversely impacts productivity. And then obviously, you know, we've had family members that have suffered from COVID. So that's been stressful. Thankfully, everybody has recovered. But working while you're, like, I'll speak frankly, my parents had COVID. So like, I'm trying to work and have Zoom meetings, take care of my daughter, and like worried about like my dad, you know, nursing himself from COVID back to health. And so that's like mentally a taxing experience. And that's even before all this racial stuff with George Floyd and Ahmaud and all that kind of stuff. My parents recovered, and then kind of we're just moving, and now this racial things comes to the forefront, and it's weird, it's complex, and now it's like really, I've never seen it like this, where it's such a big focus around for everybody. From, you know, I could go to Walmart.com and try to buy diapers, and like on the top of the band, they talk about we care about Black Lives Matter, and so I guess as a Black person, it's positive. But you can't help but have a little bit, a dose of skepticism, because we've been Black for a long time.
I'm happy that, right? You said that, because I say that, where everyone looks at me, they're like, Jody, look, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm from another country. I go, I'm a former media person, and I worked in politics. Are you kidding me? I am like a walking piece of citizenism, like every single day. So I'm so happy you just said that out loud. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's weird, because like, things happen like 4 days. Like you had like protests and like on the weekend, and then by Thursday, like you had companies saying, "Oh, we're gonna do $100 million fund for Black female entrepreneurs. We're gonna fund this." Aunt Jemima's being removed as an icon. Like it's touching all. And as a Black person, it's just kind of weird. And I guess people that are, you know, allies or whatever, they look at this like, "Oh, aren't you happy?" And it's like, I guess, but it's a little bit too weird, too fast. And we've been living in a space where we had to conduct ourselves in this environment or hierarchy. And we don't know what's going on. But what I would say is this, and to the more positive side, I said, even if 10 to 15% of what everybody's talking about actually happens, it's going to be positive for Black folks and people of color. So I think that's how I'm going to look at it. And where I could play a part, I do. And so that's it.
How do you see, again, with both topics, both pandemics, how do you see the world of technology advancing? I mean,
yeah. So a lot of
I'm just going to put a little caveat on that. A lot of older individuals that are not tech savvy, especially professors at universities. I mean, you went to Wharton, where there's like professors that have been there forever, and people go to school because of that professor, but this learning online was not what they signed up for. So how does technology, how does the pandemic of like, what does it look like in the fall? And also how does all the equity, how does it all play into the world of technology and finance?
Wow, that's a great question. There's a lot of so many layers, and I'll try to be as concise as I can be. I mean, the first thing you mentioned is education. Obviously, yes, people do not pay $75,000 a year to Harvard to be at their home looking at a screen, because a lot of those classes are free on YouTube, to be honest, right? You're there to kind of connect with professors, connect with, be on campus, be part of that vibrant environment. And so I do think that there's going to be a lot of downward pressure on education costs. I do think that the most elite schools will be okay. I think the middle tier schools that charge like they're elite are going to get hurt quite a bit, because people that are more price conscious are going to realize, what am I paying for? What am I doing? Right. So I think overall it's a good thing, because education has, it's the same textbook, same stuff, right? What's the point of increasing the cost that they've had? So, and putting people in like incredible debt. So I think I like that change. I think technology is going to change cities. So you had to live in San Francisco, New York, LA, Boston, Chicago, right, for the top jobs. But now I can work this job from home. So, like, why can't I work for Goldman Sachs and live in Louisville, Kentucky, right, or live in Tennessee, right, and work at, you know, NBC, right? So I think it's going to be incredible. I think a lot of people – I think it's going to spread – people are going to spread out throughout the country, which I think is a positive too, because it's going to make the whole – I think the places that are underdeveloped will become more developed because people move there. I think the places that are overpacked, like San Francisco, New York, should become a little bit cheaper. And then I think, you know, so that's going to have an impact. I think e-health is interesting, right? So more doctors going to do diagnosis over phone, over video like this. And so that's going to hopefully help people actually start taking care of themselves, because it's going to be easy. But also it's going to help the people that have the businesses, because they can serve more. They can serve more patients. So I think that's powerful as well. So those are the main threats I see from the, I guess, the COVID side of the pandemic. From the racial side of the pandemic, yeah, I mean, I think, like we already said, I think that we question how much of this is real. But like I said, I think if a percentage of it changes, it's fine. I mean, I think this is putting issues amongst underserved communities, particularly Black ones, at the forefront. And I think people, obviously something else is going to happen. It's going to distract people in a few weeks. That's just how the psyche works. But in this moment, it's putting things at the forefront. So companies are trying to interview people, more Black people. Schools are realizing how education system may, you know, discriminate against a certain group of individuals. So yeah, I mean, it's positive. I say positive with a dose of skepticism.
And you know, I live my days that way, and it's okay. I mean, I'd rather, for me, I mean, it's been very, very overwhelming. I mean, I'm 51 years old. I mean, I have seen so many different things. I've lived in other countries. I've lived north, south, east, west of the country. So I've seen many, many things. And mind you, I mean, everyone that knows me or anyone that's like watching me, I'm a happy-go-lucky person. It's right. Just what I am. I know how I was raised, and I know how I can dissect situations. I know the people that are, there are good and bads of everybody. So I see the forest for the trees, and I'm right. Very, very okay with the fact that my number one role in the world is to try to change just enough, my job is just to change just a little people, like educate as much as I possibly can. And I'm happy with that. I am very happy with the people that I surround myself with, including my beautiful cousins and my relatives. So I'm very happy. We didn't talk about cryptocurrency. So let's talk about how you get involved in that, because you definitely went from you transitioned from the finance, you went into the technology, these two merged together. Tell us how you got into cryptocurrency, knowing that so many people are like, what is this? I have no idea what this means. Is it monopoly money? How does it work?
Right.
You're seeing the highs, you're seeing the lows, you're seeing people making money, or is it real money? What is it for the novice? And how do you see it evolving in the future? Because even where you're going to restaurants where like, no one's touching money anymore, where it has to be via credit card. I mean, what is this going to do with all that's going on?
No, great question. I guess I'll start with a definite. I mean, when you mentioned it, you said monopoly money, and people use it to, denigrate cryptocurrency, but it's actually true. It is monopoly money. It is similar to Chuck E. Cheese, where you have a currency. You know, you go to Chuck E. Cheese and you have a currency that you can use to play games within that environment. Or you go to Six Flags and you have a coin and you can use to play game, to ride rides and all kind of stuff. It is, we do have examples within closed environments where the people have created their own currency and then that's accepted, right? But Chuck E. Cheese currency is not accepted at Pizza Hut, right? So like outside of Chuck E. Cheese, it's worthless, right? Yeah. But within Chuck E. Cheese, it matters, right? So the way I see it is like within the crypto world and amongst the people that accept it, Bitcoin matters and its competitors matters because there are something that people accept as exchange of value, right? And the value of it, it is correlated with as many people that accept it as value, right? And so it is something, right? But it's only something based on how big the community gets. And what we've seen is that the Bitcoin community has grown, and the people that are willing to take the Bitcoin digital currency, which is basically digital money. It's almost like a PayPal or Venmo, but you don't have banks involved, right? You're able to move money around, but the banks are not at the end of it, whereas a bank is part of your Venmo or your PayPal relationship. And so it's money that was kind of created technologically, basically out of the air. But because it's code base, it's limited. There's a limit to how much there is. So there's a scarcity. And then there's a group of individuals that decided that there's value here. And that's why the prices have gone up. Now, the question is, will it stay up and will it ever lose its value? It's all dependent on how the community's deciding that whether it does or doesn't. And as more and more people decide that it has value, then there's more things you could do with it. That being said, I think the space expected to this point where you would be able to use it, like in the real world, like go buy coffee with it and stuff like that, that has not happened. So it has more speculation than actual money attributes. So it's almost like a digital gold, if you will, right? I mean, you have a beautiful necklace right there that's gold. Why did you decide to make it gold instead of platinum or silver or bronze, right? There is a certain perception that you were raised with that the world shares that gold is beautiful, it signifies something. Yeah. This is a digital version of that. And it may sound weird, but as the world becomes more digitized and we live digitally, you could have digital gold, right? And you can make it scarce by code. And so that's kind of the elongated explanation of it and where I think it could go and what's going to, like, perceive whether it's going to be valuable or not. It's really more about perceiving the sentiment of the community that engages in it and how that community grows. Why was I interested in it? What I mentioned when I was in school, I was exposed to people using phones to do mobile payments. And also as an immigrant, I was exposed to people sending money from Queens to Haiti and paying Western Union, Com or MoneyGram and paying a lot of fees. And when I was working, as I worked in technology, I would always spend time learning about the new technologies and I came across Bitcoin. And what really jumped out at me is that this is a currency or a digital asset that could be sent across borders and people don't have to pay fees. I could send money. My mom could send money to family members in Haiti in a moment from phone to phone and don't even have to worry about a bank being involved, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was very optimistic. We haven't reached that point yet. I do think we will. I don't know if it's going to be in the next 2, 5, or 10 years, but people will use this technology to send money across borders. Mm-hmm. It happens. It just doesn't happen in mass. And so that's kind of what really got me interested in it. And then I started getting into the rabbit hole. And there's a whole financial aspect of it where people are trading. I was a trader. So it was the first tech thing that was tradable that I was exposed to. And so that combination really got me into it.
I have to say that you've done such a great job of morphing two worlds so perfectly. And it landed so well in your lap. I mean, like your life has... You've done such a great job of like literally like going with the flow of how things are transitioning. That's the word that I'm looking for. Basically how evolving. I mean, how the mm-hmm. financial world and technology world is evolving and you've been literally right there and you're part of history from Lehman to the way that technology is growing, the way that you grew up in going into cryptocurrency and owning it. You have a podcast, which of course I'm going to be telling people about. And I love that everyone sees you as that person, and everyone from all over the world is engaging with you, and you're being asked to speak in different locations all about cryptocurrency, because you started at the beginning and you've been that in the forefront, which is amazing.
Thank you.
Which, of course, I'm always so proud of you about that, because you're my baby cousin and I love that. So
thank you. Thank you.
If you had a, this is like I ask, like I always send everyone sample questions of what I'm going to talk about. And sometimes I get to all of them and sometimes I just like hit a couple of them, but there was so much that you do that I wanted to touch upon, especially because of the right now. But sure. The last one always ends one way and I never tell people in advance, but if you were going to have an ask, a personal and professional ask of anyone and everyone that's like listening to you right now, what would be your personal and what would be your professional ask of everyone and anyone?
Thank you. That is in this day and age, I guess the professional and personal ask is probably similar. But I do think that the world, I guess I'm gonna say the personal one, and obviously this is in the background of racial issues and things of that sort. I would say try to engage with somebody that doesn't look like you and learn where they come from. I think what we live in vacuums and bubbles, and that's one of the biggest issues with what's causing a lot of friction that we have in this world and the lack of compassion. And so like try to, learn from somebody that doesn't look like you. And it goes both ways, right? So obviously it's not only about people that are the majorities learning from minorities, but a minority learning from the majority and their background can understand, there could be a back and forth there. So I'm not sure how best to do it. I don't know if there has to be some website that just randomly put people in Zoom meetings that look nothing like them in this environment. But, that's one thing. Or it could be just, obviously you can't do it in the street because you have to be 6 feet away, but it might be, you could do it. There's digital ways to do it. And so I don't know what that transpires to, but with minimal effort, I think people could do it. So that's probably my personal ask. And then my professional ask is somewhat similar, I think, is if you are in the position, if you are, either in the beginning of your career or advanced, but this is more so for people that advance, try to teach the skills that you accumulated, or at least some of them, to somebody that's younger and doesn't look like you. And so this one's probably more specific. I ask of people that are more majority into, because I'm obviously the split of representation is completely different. But it also goes for people like us, right? We, like, for instance, for me, I would say personally that, I try my best to like reach back, but like I'm still focused on the forward and moving up. I haven't done a good job of teaching even younger people in our family to younger people that come from my neighborhood or younger people that come from my parents' homeland, Haiti, you name it. Like I could do more there, right? Yeah. So I guess mentorship, I could have just used that word. Become a mentor. And mentor, you don't have to you don't have to be some sort of big nonprofit. It could be like something very simple. Mentorship is important.
I love that. I agree with all of it. We grew up together. I agree with everything you're saying, because we were all raised the same exact way. I think all of our parents were very, very much in regards of raising us all in, if we're coming to America, we want to provide the American dream for you. And being first generation here, we work really hard and we're really engaged and we're very, very focused. And we do give back. You say that you don't, but like, I watch you. You give back so much. You do a lot. You're mentoring, you're guiding, you're opening doors for people. So although you're saying it, I'm watching you. I'm watching all of
right.
My- and so don't sell yeah. short on that one. My grandmother, mommy's on my mom's side. She raised us as in your lifetime, befriend people of all ages, all ethnicities, all genders, everyone, because when you die, you'll have a full house. And so
right.
She died at 95 and 1 month, she had a full house. And you could, when I was doing her eulogy, you could look around and there was everyone. Everyone was there. And I just love that. That was always in my head. I surround myself with everyone. I travel around the world. I can make a friend walking out the door just because my, I mean, mind you, my parents were like, she's going to get kidnapped one day because she talks to everyone. She can't stop. But I'm curious. I'm curious. And I love talking
right.
to everyone. And I can't learn if I'm not. So I love the fact that you are doing it in the financial world and the tech world, where I wish I knew even just a little bit of it. And I just don't. It's just like, it's so over my head. I've approached sure. it times like, teach me, because I just don't know. But you sure. that in your industry. And I think that your industry is growing for the better because you are in it. So thank you. Thank you very much for like taking away from your beautiful daughter, which I was thinking about, like, maybe she's going to like pipe in there, but it's okay. We'll just like throw a photo in there. So that way people see her beautiful face.
Of course.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your day. You're the best. I love you.
And I love you too, cousin.
Offline, I'm going to call you because I want to have a great deep conversation about what's going on in the world, because it's the best time to actually have these great conversations with family as well.
100%. All right. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be on your podcast, and it's a pleasure and honor to be your little cousin. And thank you for being a trailblazer in the family and inspiring all of us. You know, best wishes to everybody. I think we're living in an interesting time, and you know, we have all kind of battles. I think one of the main battles that we haven't talked about is mental. So take care of your mental strength, to everybody that's listening.